Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Desi Condition. I'm Tanushree and today we're talking about one woman's experience growing up in a Punjabi household as a female and how it affected her relationship with her parents and her brother, as well as coming to terms with her identity both as an individual and as a woman and learning to understand her parents' point of view. Hi Sabreet.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Pretty well. I'm excited to have a conversation with you today.
Definitely. How are you dealing with this COVID quarantine situation?
Honestly, just surviving. The best thing to do is just staying at home. So just practicing some self-love, reading books, you know, trying to make sure that everyone else is safe out there. And the best thing you can do is just stay at home. So I'm surviving. How about yourself?
I'm staying home, but I'm also doing a lot of like stress cooking and baking, but I'm the only one at the other end of that. So like, I'm also doing a lot of stress eating, which is not great, but I am making small portions.
No, I'm doing the same thing. I can't stop eating. I feel like I've ate all of my grocery that I planned for the next 2 weeks, but I guess that's the fun of being at home, right?
I know. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm Sabreet. I'm a Sikh Punjabi Indian American woman. I was born and raised in Flushing, New York. My family moved down to Baltimore in the 2000s. I have a brother, and growing up was pretty interesting because my parents immigrated over here and we were kind of both learning how to be American at the same time or being Indian at the same time. So it definitely was an interesting experience. I am a researcher by nature. So I went to school. I do have a doctorate in public administration. And I just one day woke up and I was like, I think I need to write a book. And when that happened,
as one does, you know,
kind of caught me off guard. I didn't know why. I just had this idea that I need to write a book, but it kind of, a lot of things inspired me to be that voice for a community that I believe is marginalized. Being an Indian American Punjabi woman, I come from a family that isn't really financially secure. My parents aren't lawyers or doctors or don't have professional careers, but they really wanted to make sure that I had a professional career. And I have seen them work their labor jobs, providing me for the foundation of my success today. So I'm also a giant nerd. I would read a lot of books trying to see where, are there other people like me out there? When I would read those books, I kind of saw it, kind of didn't. And I just realized that what happens, like, I don't know, I'm not that smart Indian, right? Everyone, when you went to school, everyone's like, you're smart. You probably know how to do math and science and all these other things. And I'm like, I think I'm smart. I don't really know. So it became a situation where I felt like I had to fight my own stereotype within my community, but also in the American community as well. So I was just learning what that meant. And then it eventually led to me writing a memoir called Generation Zero. The memoir Generation Zero is about the first generation Indian American experience, what that means when you come from a family that has immigrated to America, when they're trying to figure out what it means to be American, and just all the experiences that you have along the way as you grow up. Mm-hmm. So that's me.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's a really important voice for us to hear these days. What's the premise of the book?
So one of the big reasons why I wanted to write this book was realizing that I do have a voice. When I was born, one of the first stories that was told to me was that my gender made my father upset. My dad wanted me to be a boy. He wanted to have a boy first, and I'm the eldest child. So once I was born a female, he was a little upset about that. And throughout my life, I've realized there have been a couple of things that have shaped my invisibility and realizing when I do have a voice and when I don't. For most of my life, I was trying to realize that, why does my gender matter? What are these experiences? Why are my experiences different than my brother's experience, who was born 14 months after I was? And why do I feel like I don't have a voice? And there are a lot of reasons why I felt this way growing up. But I think for most of my life, I realized that I was pretty silent because of that first story told to me about my gender, but also as I was growing up and I was getting educated, not coming from a privileged family that has a lot of education or has a lot of money, I realized my voice came in two ways. So first, it was proving to myself that, hey, I'm actually pretty intelligent. And then also, after I obtained a certain amount of success, realizing that, hey, I actually do love a boy and I want to get married to him. How do I voice this thing to my parents that I'm not really comfortable talking about? So discovering love, trying to figure out my voice, was kind of along those lines. And then once I actually had that conversation, I think that's when I really realized that, hey, wait, I'm actually not afraid of myself anymore. I'm pretty powerful. My voice is pretty amazing. Why am I always at odds with myself? And I think one of the biggest reasons I wrote this book was to be a voice for a community, whether it's for a woman, whether it's for anyone that feels this way, that I convinced a lot of my life that I didn't have a voice. Once I had that voice, I realized it's okay to be outspoken. It's okay to have those uncomfortable conversations and talk to people with your heart, because that's all we have, right?
So it sounds like kind of the catalyst for finding your voice was realizing, like, okay, I'm in love with this man. I want to marry this man. What am I going to do next?
Correct. And I feel like a lot of my life was revolving around just finding that love. Okay. And realizing that, hey, you know, you're female, and then realizing that, wait, I'm not supposed to love anyone or anything or myself. And then realizing that once I found a person that I really loved, that helped me love myself, that, wait, I don't want to lose this person. I have such a great, amazing relationship with myself now. What do I do? Because I need to voice this to somebody, because I'm changing, because now I love myself. You know, I'm different. I'm a different human being. The way that I understand love is different now, but I don't want to lose this love that I have that essentially makes me me. And from there, then I became really afraid. Like, how do I have this conversation with my parents? Because the man that I fell in love with was not Punjabi. He was not Sikh. He is Hindu, and he's Malayali. So we're completely different in that aspect, but we're united in the common understanding that we're Indian. He's also a first generation Indian American. So there's a lot of commonalities, but also a lot of differences between our communities. And that made me really afraid that, wait, I want to present this suitor to my family, and they're probably going to be like, there are all these ways that you're different, but I want to be like, but the way that we're the same is that we both love each other, and you know, we're both trying to figure out what it means to be American at the same time. So why is that not enough? Or at least that's what I convinced myself, that he wasn't enough. So,
So how did that conversation go?
So I think that conversation, first, it took a lot for me to get to that conversation. I feel like I had to really understand that this is the man for me. I met my husband when I was really young. I was 16 years old. And when we met each other, we kind of got caught with our family and things kind of got exploded a bit. And I was told, like, what is happening, Sabrina? You cannot do this. You can't be distracted falling in love. And I was reprimanded quite quickly. When that happened, I realized that maybe there is something wrong with loving someone that's kind of outside the box of, like, approval. And I kind of...
Did that whole thing happen when you were 16, where you heard all that stuff?
Yes. So
Wow. Okay.
When I was 16 years old, I realized that conversation that I had with my parents, they're like, what are you doing? You can't be falling in love. You have to be focusing on getting an education. This person is ABCD. They're kind of outside the norm of who we would expect for you to marry. You kind of need to stay in your lane. So imagine trying to understand your own identity. Imagine trying to develop an identity, but also understanding what love really is as a teenager. And it was very confusing, but I do remember being really upset, because in overnight, my relationship with my parents kind of changed. It was kind of a situation where I was being monitored. And from that moment of my life onward, I felt like I had to live a double life. They told us to break up. We kind of broke up for like a few weeks, but we started talking again. But I felt like it was really difficult for me to understand why a love like this wasn't accepted. And granted, we're only teenagers. I don't know if we're going to end up getting married. It was just my first love. But I am fortunate enough that I was able to marry my first love, and we grew together instead of growing apart. But I think just having that first conversation about why are you in love, you need to stop this, wasn't really it didn't sit well with my parents, especially with my father. He was kind of really upset about it. He mentioned the story about when I was born, he took down the pictures of our gurus, and then he mentioned it again. He's like, there's reasons why I didn't want a daughter. It's kind of hard to raise a daughter in America. Not only is it more expensive, but also it's the way we have to guide you is different. We don't want you to get into bad stuff. We don't know who you're falling in love with, all these things. So it kind of was like I kind of got a little shocked. And I just remember growing up from 16 and onward that I actually had three parents. My brother would also kind of like monitor me, coach me, kind of like it kind of became a situation where.
And he was your younger brother too.
Yeah, he was my younger
brother. That's so interesting.
And okay. it kind of became a situation where I felt like it was just me against them, and I couldn't open up. And so I would only let them see what they wanted to see, that I am not going to fall in love. I'm not going to talk to boys. I'm not going to have any friends. I'm just going to put my nose to the ground and just study. And that was the only thing that I could show them to be accepted by my family. But then I went to college. I'm still with my boyfriend. We're figuring it out if we're actually going to be together or not. You know, as you grow up, it's just, you know, you learn a lot about what you're expecting in a relationship, if this relationship is going to be the one that you want to eventually marry. So it became a situation where as I was growing up with him, that I was self-sabotaging a lot. He's a great guy. He's been nothing but nice to me, but I felt like a lot of like the battles in our relationship have been the ones that I've been putting in our relationship, where I've been always been pushing him away because I've been afraid of not being accepted, because the first time that they heard about him, they were like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. So throughout my life, I was pushing him away, but then it became a point after every single thing that I've accomplished, every single thing I achieved, and just the love that we had was so strong that I can't imagine my reality without this man. Mm-hmm. I love him more than anything in the world. He's my best friend. So then I was like, well, now I got to tell my parents, and this is the hardest thing that I'll ever have to do, because I'm actually afraid of how it's going to be received. When I told my dad, I had to sit him down.
And how old are you at this point?
I was 26 years old when I told my dad. So 10 years later, here I am finally strong enough to tell my parents that I love this man. I want to get married to him. Mm-hmm. But it was a situation where when I was 26 years old, I was telling my parents about how I felt about him. But more importantly, I needed to talk to my dad about it. And what's interesting is that my relationship with my brother changed as I grew up as well. And I remember he was telling me, hey, do you want me to help you to talk to dad about this? Because he also was dating a woman that was an interfaith, intercaste kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And at first I took him up on his offer, but then I kind of was like, nah, I think I can do this by myself, because my parents learned that he had a girlfriend and they reacted to him quite differently than they reacted to me. When they found out that he had a girlfriend, my dad was like taking a shot of Black Label. He was excited. Mm-hmm. He was like, I can't believe you're in love. But so that kind of further complicated my whole belief system of what they're going to think when I present my suitor.
Did that change your relationship with your brother too?
It actually didn't change my relationship with my brother. It kind of made me realize just how things are not equal. And it's, mm-hmm. it made me not resent him, but more, I guess, love him to an extent, because even through our differences and how we were raised, he was always supporting me. And it wasn't easy for him to understand that. He kind of had to like break out of his own belief systems of what our parents were teaching us. But I think it was one of those situations where it did hurt. It hurt a lot. Now you're growing up with your sibling and their experiences are so different than yours, but they sometimes can't understand that a lot of your experiences are defined by your gender. And I don't think you really understand that. You only understand that when, if you're experiencing that. So mm-hmm. it became like a kind of complicated relationship, but it was mostly out of love, because I remember when he fell in love and he saw just how ridiculous like everything was happening with me. He kind of became like my star. He's like, do you want me to help you? How can I help you? How can I get mom and dad to change? Or what can I do to help you get the love that you want? Because the one that I have is the one for me. So I think just hearing that whole experience of like my dad taking the shot and like me trying to protect him and, you know, whatever, it was very interesting for me, because I kind of felt upset and I resented just the whole gender inequality dynamic that we had in our family. I thought about it so much and I wanted to be happy for him. I was happy for him, but I was also really hurt being hurt really made me push everyone in my family away, and to the point where I didn't want to even have this conversation anymore. I had now convinced myself that my reality is the reality that I think they've defined for me, which is that my voice doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't want to have that conversation for a long time. I mean, I was in the dark. I was really uncomfortable. But then there came a point where my brother wanted to propose to his girlfriend. And I was like, I have been with this man literally my whole life. I need to talk to my parents. I need to get them on the same boat as me. But I was just very afraid of that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't easy. So I remember I decided that in order for me to tackle the biggest battle of my life was to meet them where they're at. So I was like, regardless of whatever I have to go through, I know I want to get their approval because my parents mean the world to me, especially because they're immigrant parents. They've given so much to me. I want them in my life, but I was ready to face the fact that if they didn't accept this, that I was going to walk away from one of the most important relationships of my life, which is with them, to be with another relationship that is equally as important. But I sat down, I told my dad, it was kind of funny because it's like, when I sat down, I was like, hey dad, I have something to talk to you. He just like was busy doing his own thing. He was like, oh, come back later. I'm like drinking my tea, whatever. And I'm like, no, I really need to talk to you now. And it's kind of important. So I kind of had that conversation with my dad. It took a lot out of me. I was sweating profusely. I was losing it. But I was like, hey, dad, this is going to be pretty intense. But I have a boy friend. Like, at first I was like, I have a boy friend. Like, oh, my God. But I'm like, I have a boyfriend. I want to marry him. And I'm like literally spitting out his bio data to him. Like, he is educated.
Right, like before you say no, he's this.
Literally explaining everything. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, and he's an only child, and also his family, he has like these many aunts. Look, I'm going crazy. I'm explaining everything. Right. And my dad literally says nothing to me. And I'm like, yeah, so like, yeah, I like someone, I want to marry him. And I'm like, I'm not stupid in love. Like, I've known him for a while. So it's not like, I'm like, oh, he's cute, whatever. I don't believe in that. I was like, I really just love his soul. Okay. So like, let's talk about that. And my dad heard me and didn't hear me at the same time. So he heard me, and imagine having a conversation with someone and telling them your whole life, like literally like, I love them because of this. Oh my God, I'm freaking out, dad, like all these things. Like just having this conversation with him took everything in me to have. But then when you responded back in the way where it doesn't meet you how you had that conversation, it just hurts. Mm-hmm. He was like, all right, well, thank you for letting me know. I'm going to need to think. And I wasn't expecting this. And I just need some time to think about what you just told me. And I was like, okay, well, I literally told you everything you probably need to know, like the bio data. What are you talking about? You should probably make your decision like right now. Here we go. Yeah. Right here. And he was like, no, well, I'm going to need some time. And then he did indicate, he's just like, I'm just surprised that you didn't come to me sooner.
I love how they're always surprised. I'm like, have you seen your actions?
Like, your actions show me that I can't talk to you, like, mm-hmm. about anything. And I only have talked to you about something when I realize it's ready for the final step, which is, like, being married. Yeah. So here we are talking about the bio data, everything that needs to happen in order for us to get married, and why I've vetted this man before, so you don't have to worry about it. You just have to sign the line.
I know. And this is like, you hear so many stories of brown girls going through the same exact thing where they want to get married, but they won't say anything until like the very, very, very last second. And nobody's ever explained. I feel like you explained it in such like an eloquent way. Like, I think you did like such a good job summarizing like Sabrit's Desi condition of like having this like identity crisis and not feeling like you have a voice, and how that has to do so much with your gender. And that's something that I feel like we all have so much trouble trying to articulate.
And it's so true though. And I think about it like this, like I'm talking to you and we're having a conversation. Then all of a sudden our expectation is like, I'm talking to you. We give each other the space to talk. But then all of a sudden I just like hang up on you, and now I'm going to go eat an ice cream without even telling you that I'm done with this conversation. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And I feel like sometimes like Indian parents do such a poor job of communicating their own belief system and how it's changing, that when you are only operating on the initial reaction of you're Indian, you don't want me to have these conversations with you, so I won't have these conversations with you until I'm ready to get married. But then also, when you tell them and they're like, listen, I'm kind of shocked you're telling me right now, let's have those conversations earlier, right? And not those conversations about like policing another person with their gender, like, hey, you're a girl, so we need to treat you differently, we're afraid of these things for you, all these other things. But have those conversations more frequently with your child, so they also know that that dialogue can be opened. Why does it always have to be the child that's like, hey, you messed up, you're telling us at a wrong time? I've never really understood that. Mm-hmm. And I felt like most of my life was really defined by that moment of my gender. And I feel like as I was going through school, as I was going through everything, I was kind of like on autopilot trying to prove people wrong. It's like, imagine being born and being told, like, you're not going to matter because you're a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. So I'm not going to matter because I'm a girl. That's kind of interesting. Like, you're wrong. So I'm going to do A, B, C, D to tell you that you're actually wrong. People react better when they see results. So I became really result driven, try to be the best perfect person I could be at the expense of hurting myself, not realizing that I wasn't living for me. I was living for this expectation of being this perfect person for then to obtain love from my own parents.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you've made other huge life decisions based off of just seeking love from your parents?
Like every single one. Uh-huh. Like, I feel like...
Or actually, let me rephrase that question. Do you feel like you've regretted certain life decisions that you made based off of seeking love from your parents? Or do you feel like they came from both that place of looking for your parents' approval, but also from like you trying to find your own identity as Sabreeth?
I feel like, I mean, this is, it's really an interesting question that you have, because it's like, I feel like the person that I hurt the most was myself. Mm-hmm. And it was once I was told their expectations of, you're going to get married. When you get married, you're going to move out. You're not going to carry our family name. Economically, you have no ties to us. So even though you're a child, we don't give a hell. You know, you're a girl, you're gone. And having all these things that defined my reality of their child, I didn't like that. Because you can't take my name away. You know, like it's something that I choose to do. Maybe I want to keep my maiden name, maybe I don't. That's my own decision. But all these things that I wasn't even allowed to have that conversation of, what if I want to be your rock? What if I want to like help you for the rest of my life financially? What if I want to carry out our traditions more so than you think your son wants to? Mm-hmm. Or there were all these things that kind of defined like how I was expected to react and live my life, my whole life. And I never was like that. I'm so emotionally intelligent in the sense where I'm really emotional with things that define me as me, and define my family. Like I'm Punjabi, you know, I'm Sikh. I love these things about myself. And I love that my dad was a taxi driver. I love that my mom was a cashier at Wendy's. Like these things make my life and I don't want to hide them, but you can't take away my identity of who I want to be by saying all the things I can't be.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of that, so much of my life was trying to prove them that I'm more than just what they think I can't be. And I went out of my way. I, you know, pursued things where I'm like, you know, I mean, my parents really couldn't guide us through school. They were like, just be whatever you want to be. Anything that pays you well, just do it. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm really inquisitive and I like really like people's problems and I like researching people. So I'm going to be a researcher. Now, what kind of researcher do I want to be? Like, I was kind of like my own boss at a very young age, trying to figure out what's going to work for me, what's going to ultimately give me the best results. And I didn't have any of those conversations with my parents. If I ever got a B or a C on like reading or something, like I internalized that and I realized that it was my fault and it wasn't something that I can bring to them. But also, I didn't want them to ever think there was anything wrong with me because I felt like there was so much wrong with me already.
Mm.
So I feel like I did a disservice, I think, because of the Stacey condition that was given to me at birth was that you're a girl and you just aren't going to be that stable in our lives, honestly. And I fought my whole life trying to show them that the stability that they're trying to obtain can only come from me because I love them. I want to be here for them for the rest of my life. And they're not just, you know, the burden of my brother. I love my brother, and he always has a sister that's going to help him in every aspect of his life, caring for our parents because they're going to be our parents forever. I feel like that's what really ended up happening, and I mostly hurt my own mental health throughout growing up. Everywhere I went, I realized that if there was ever anything wrong with me, I would not only fight myself, console myself, and then realize I need to improve myself only within myself. I never realized that the world can probably be impacting me in a way where all these internal battles that I'm having might have something to do with my exterior. So trying to figure out, how do I be the perfect person? So once I'm a perfect person, my voice will be heard. And I didn't realize that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So you spent your whole life looking for this approval, looking for this love from your parents. And then did you get it?
So I think I got it, but it wasn't easy, right? So what really irritated me was after I had that conversation with my dad, he took his good old time realizing that it's up to him to decide my life, essentially.
Right. It's as if you were asking for permission.
I was asking for permission. And I'm like, listen, this is kind of a courtesy. Even though I would love for your permission, I would love for us to have a relationship forever, I still have a time limit. Like, I kind of want to get married and get this off my boat because I just want to, like, be with my man now. Like, be a newlywed, figure out all these things. But I had my own timeline of when I expected approval by, and that wasn't achieved. It took a long time. And because it was taking such a long time, it frustrated the living heck out of me. I was very upset. And I remember having conversations with my family. They were just trying to ignore me, meaning like talk about everything else in our life except for the fact that I want to marry a man. And I remember after every single conversation that I had with him, I was like a cannonball. Like, I would just, they would be like, oh, do you want to like go somewhere? I'll be like, why? Is it because I'm a girl? Like, everything was like, is it because I'm a girl? You want me to go get you water because it's a girl? They're like, no, like, I'm just thirsty. I just gave you water like 5 minutes ago. Why? What is wrong with you? I'm like, it's because I'm a girl, isn't it? They're like, what is happening to you? But I was mentally destroying myself, so upset that why aren't you answering my question? And I remember just like poking at them, like being really just not nice to them and being out of control mean, to the point where I just exploded one day and I was just like, answer the question, yes or no? Because if you tell me yes, got it, cool. If you tell me no, I have like a plan for both. So let me know what you want me to do. And I remember my dad was like upset because I was like always acting up. And then he sent me like a note underneath my door. And it was like, honestly, like.
Such backwards. Like, that's so backwards. Funny.
I literally felt like I was in a Bollywood movie. Like, what the hell is happening? Here I am sitting in my room and I get this carrier mail, like whatever. I look at the piece of note, the note, and it's like a picture of me. It's like a stick figure. And he just literally says, you're bad, but I'll talk to him. And I'm like, okay, so I'm bad. I don't give a shit, but you're going to talk to him. And whatever. I go downstairs and I ask him, so did you write me a note? He's like, yeah, I think so. I don't know. Someone wrote a note. And I'm like, cool. I was like, so do I get him over? Like, what? Like, do you want to meet him? He's like, yeah, send him over. And I'm like, okay. And then my husband came over. He talked to my parents. And it was just really funny. I remember when I texted him, I'm like, yo, you can come over. He's like, the next question he sent me back was, okay, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah. And then I'm like, yeah, maybe wear a bulletproof vest. He's like, calm down. Like, you're being crazy. But I'm like, I don't know. But like, he came over and he had this conversation with mostly my dad. My mom was like, whatever your dad wants, I'm okay with. Because of the reality of like Punjabi women and Punjabi mothers, or they're just invisible. So she's like, whatever he says, it's fine. But you know, I've always supported you my whole life. And I'm like, thanks, mom, love you, but I need your support now. And so he came over and my dad was kind of asking him like his 5-year plan, all these other things. And
is this a job interview?
It literally was a job interview. And yeah. I'm just like, I wasn't able to attend that meeting. I was told to not be attending that meeting. My brother was there. My mother was there. My father was there. But I was told I could not be attending this meeting. And I'm like, this is so strange. This meeting is literally defining my whole life, but I can't attend it. Cool. And
wait, why weren't you allowed to be there?
It's just, I don't understand either to this day. It was just so bizarre. It's so backwards. It's like talking about your rishta and you're not supposed to be there. I guess it's like their understanding of life. I'm like, but hold up. I'm smarter than you. We have stairs. I'm literally sitting on the stairs. I can hear everything you guys are saying. So it was like so formal. And I was like, this is so dumb, but I heard everything. And then I remember towards the end, my dad's like, Sabri, come downstairs. I'm like, oh shit, I'm coming downstairs. And my dad literally has my husband there, and he has me there, and he's like asking my husband, like, why do you love her? And then he says all the amazing things that he says. He's just like, you know, she's not going to always look this way. She's not always going to be nice. Like, he's like explaining my character to him. Like, he doesn't know who I am.
Right.
And he's just like, okay, if this is what you guys want, I'm okay with you guys getting married. We can go meet the family. And I was like, whoa, this is awesome. But then I was like, cool, I guess he agrees. But then I felt a little uneasy. I was like, okay, I have this like approval, right? But I just didn't feel the same. I felt...
Yeah, you got the thing you were looking for. And yeah. There was still just something missing. What do you think that was?
I think that thing that I was missing was my own appreciation for myself. Because I feel like my life was defined by this moment of like being heard. And then just the ins and outs of like craziness of how that happened, or it was whatever. But I wasn't happy after that was that news of the best news you could possibly get as a woman. I wasn't happy. I was very unhappy.
You think it's because it just took so long to get to that point?
I think so. I think it took so long to get to that point. But also, I feel like it is really important to address that sometimes what you're looking for can't be answered from the outside. It has to be answered within. And I feel like I was looking for this approval from my parents. The process took forever. Mm-hmm. But I didn't heal myself within. Like, I just didn't. I still felt like, okay, now I have a voice. Like, oh my God, you heard something I had to say. I didn't know how to react to that. I was very upset with my own self of facilitating going through this craziness to like get to that. But also, more importantly, thinking about, wait, so now I have the thing that I've been fighting for my whole life. And I realized that was the moment where I was no longer on autopilot. I was like, I'm free.
Oh, so it's just kind of like shocking for you.
It was shocking. I'm not on autopilot anymore. I'm free. You can hear what I have to say. I have decisions that I can make. You'll respect them.
Right. Like, what next?
I had a complete identity crisis. I'm like, who the hell am I as a person?
How long did this process take, by the way?
I mean, this took months. I want to say like a solid year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it took a long time. And I just didn't understand, like, then everyone's like, you know, they go into the craziness, like, okay, you're going to have a proposal, all these other things. And I just didn't understand. I didn't understand how we went from, like, not talking about it to talking about everything. Like, now we're going to plan this wedding. We're going to do this. We're going to do all these things. And I'm like, so we're going to talk about everything, but not going to address the fact that we didn't talk about love for years. Like, I'm not comfortable having these conversations with you. So I was mentally just not in the headspace to entertain the thought of being happy, facilitating like a show for everyone that we're happy for Sabri and stuff like that. Cause I didn't really feel like the happiness was given to me immediately. I feel like because I had to wait and earn it, that are you really happy or are you just trying to get me out? But yeah, so it just definitely was an interesting experience. I just feel like it was at that moment I realized that I'm not happy and I really don't know what to do about it.
Okay, so how was it going through all the wedding planning and everything?
I hated
it. During the wedding, even.
I hated it. Like, everything about it, I just completely hated it. I, even till this day, I hear that my wedding was beautiful. I integrated the Sikh and the Hindu weddings in such a beautiful way. The families were amazing throughout, but I hated it. I hated every single aspect of it. I felt like I had to put on this facade to be on the next phase of my life. And the reason I hated it so much was because it just didn't feel authentic. I just felt like my whole life has been revolved around not having this voice. And now, like, we're going to broadcast it to the world that Sabri's going to have a choice over her dress or these things. What what is happening? Mm-hmm. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me. And it just almost honestly, it became a situation where I also was starting to grieve the fact that I'm actually going to leave my parents' house. And I spent so much of my life hating this house because of everything that was defined for me. And I wasn't ready to say bye yet. I was going to leave, obviously, you know, moving with my husband and everything like that. But because that's what we wanted to do. But I didn't want to, I felt like even though they were on a happy note, I was on a sour note. Like, for 27 years of my life, I've had a really horrible relationship with you. And here I am now leaving and we have a really good relationship. What is happening?
Mm-hmm. Seems like you kind of have some maybe or had some resentment or like fear of love.
Yeah.
Like parental and love.
Parental love, definitely. Mm-hmm. I feel like I resented the fact that I received love so late. Mm-hmm. I have now grown to understand that the love was always there. I just couldn't see it because I defined my reality in such a way where I was unable to see it. But also, to think that my parents didn't love me is kind of like, it's kind of crazy, I think. I think that was something that I convinced to myself. Like,
so how did you start to realize that actually they did, they always have loved you? And when did you start to accept that?
I literally started realizing it after I got married. Like, I just didn't see them anymore. There was a void. And I couldn't understand that void. And I felt like that void was probably me. Like, maybe there's something going on with me. Why am I so unhappy? But I realized that void had a lot to do with them and how I've experienced my life with them. Once something is gone, like you don't see them every day and you don't have the relationship changes, I think you have a moment in your life where you can reflect. And once I started really reflecting, taking care of my mental health and realizing where are all these questions coming from, why am I hurting so much? Where am I hurting? And why is this still my reality today that I'm not happy? I realized that a lot of it actually had a lot to do with me. So it kind of goes back to like that, you know, the Indian parent thing where you can't have these conversations with them. I was just operating on the instructions you told me from the beginning of my life, throughout my life. And every little thing that I did was wrong. I realized let's pivot. Let's do this another way. But I just could never be authentically myself to my parents. And the first time I was able to ever show them who I authentically was telling them I loved somebody. And they approved it, but they showed me that that love that they had for me was always there, but in a different way, right? And I feel like I was just so shocked of, like, finally receiving, like, a genuine, like, parental love that didn't have this obligation of, like, being married, or now you're someone else's responsibility, these things that you hear about a girl. And once all of that was taken away, I think for the first time in my life, my parents saw me for who I was, and I just realized, is it something that I've convinced myself or has it always been there? And I can't answer that. I don't know if that's something that's like the Desi community and the conditioning that we have as a female or as a girl. But I just literally started realizing that afterwards when I was no longer with them. And then I realized that every single time that I went to my parents' house, I'm like living my best life with my husband. We're doing our own thing. But like they live like 45 minutes away from us. I'm driving down and I somehow get into a fight with my husband every single time. It'll be like a stupid fight. It would be like, did you do the laundry? Why didn't you pick up this? Did you feed the dog? Whatever. Like things that don't make any sense. But it was always every single time I was driving to that house. And I realized when I parked at that house and I got out of the door, I was in such a bad mood every single time. I was like, hi, mom, what do you want? Hey, dad, whatever. But they would now shower me with this love and affection of like, we missed you. We haven't seen you in 2 weeks. Where have you been? And I'm like, I've been here. So it became like I feel like our roles kind of reversed in a sense where I'm like, now you miss me? What about when I was with you the whole time? Like, I had to heal myself. Like, I realized at the end of the day, I had to heal myself. I was so upset for most of my life because I feel like I couldn't talk to them. And then when I had conversations and I realized that they loved me the whole time, why did I take such a long time to have that conversation with my parents about that? Mm-hmm. And it really kind of goes back to, I think, one conversation that I had with my dad that kind of made me realize that I did a disservice to myself and maybe did a disservice to him as my father. After, like, I had been proposed to or whatever, my dad sits me down one day. He's, like, drinking his Black Label. And he's like, Sabrina, I want to talk to you about something. It was kind of like clearing the air. And I'm like, okay, let's have a conversation, Dad. What are we talking about? He was like, I just want to talk about that story. And I'm like, what story? There's a million stories. And he's like, when you were born a girl. And I'm like, not the story. Like, the story that has defined my life. Can we just not talk about this? And he goes, like, let me explain. He's like, when you were born, I was afraid. He's like, first of all, raising a woman is hard in India, anywhere you go. He's like, but raising a girl in a country you don't even know how that country is, in America, it's extremely hard. And I was afraid to raise you. I was afraid of everything that was going to happen because you're a girl. And he essentially was just telling me that that Ab was born and he felt like God didn't listen to him. And the reason he didn't listen to him because he didn't feel prepared. He's like, if there was something that you needed, I didn't have anyone to help me with that. I didn't have my parents, like his parents have passed. They're not there to help him. He doesn't have a network here that can help him, guide him. Like, this is what you should do with your daughter. People in India don't understand him. So it's kind of like he's on his own with this, like, for lack of better words, just like this life sentence of raising this girl. He has no idea what to do. And he kind of resented me then. And he convinced himself so much that he resented me where I feel like he kind of pushed me away because of like the economical factors of like raising a woman and a whole bunch of other stuff. But more importantly, the biggest thing that he told me was, I pushed you away because regardless of how I think you are, he's like, you're the smartest. You have your voices. You're so outspoken. Even if you don't think you are, you're always talking. Like, you're always like, I don't like this. You're so opinionated. He's just like, I've never met a woman like you. And he just like, but he's like, regardless of where you go, your community sometimes doesn't change. He's like, I was afraid for you to be as outspoken as you are and still not be treated the way you're supposed to be. But he didn't treat me that way. And he realized that throughout his life. And that's when he was getting a little emotional. And he's just like, I always see myself in you. And he's like, I always thought like, okay, if she was born a boy, what would she do? Like, would she get into drugs? Would she be a gangster? I don't know. Like, there's so many other things you can think about. And he just like, I realized like you were born the way you were supposed to be. And I'm like blessed to have a woman like you in my life. That's my daughter. But I'm sorry it took me so long to get to that level.
Mm. And so he had this whole growth and you didn't see it.
I didn't see it.
Yeah. And he probably didn't express it, I assume.
He never expressed it, like, at all. Yeah. He would only express it when I would, like, mess up. Like, if I'll do something that was, like, just me being a teenager or being an adult. Like, I fell in love, and my dad's like, I fell in love, too. It sucks. Stop it. Okay.
Wow.
What? Like, yeah. It was kind of jarring. I never really understood why, like, I would do these things, and he would just compare me to himself and then also say, you need to stop doing that. I was just like, are you trying to help me learn from your mistakes, or are you doing it because you think I'm a girl? I don't understand.
Yeah. So you talked about before, like, you know, why did it take me so long to have this conversation with my parents? If you had known that your dad had changed in these ways, do you think you would have done it sooner?
I definitely think I would have done it sooner. And it's one of those things that you, after an event has happened, you think about it so much. You're like, yeah. how could I change it? When could I have had that conversation? And
but do you think that would have helped you in defining your own identity too? Because I think that was also a big part of why you didn't reach out.
No, I definitely think, I mean, if I would have, so I think I would have reached out, but then I've been so confused that I didn't know who I was. So it's kind of like, it's such a weird phenomena, honestly. It's like, Here are my parents. Here I am, and my thinking has changed living in America, who I am, and everything. I never once thought that maybe because they lived in America that their belief systems were changing too, that maybe they also believed some of the things that I did. We just never had those conversations. I essentially robbed years of my life with my parents because my identity was defined by how they never loved me. So it's like, I first had to understand that, hey, they do love me. And the only way that I understood that they loved me was after I presented my suitor. But more importantly, I was unable to see how they loved me throughout the different things that they showed me because I wouldn't know who I would be. Like, what would give me that fire? Where would I get that voice? Where would I get that drive? Like, what if the condition of being a girl was taken away from me? Then who do I be? I don't know. Myself? What is myself?
Yeah.
Who am I? I don't really know. So I would love to have that conversation sooner, but then I think that would have, my whole life would have been different. I think if I would have had conversations with my parents, like, hey, I'm dating this man and we had this fight, like, I would love to have those conversations that you see that a lot of parents have with their children where they're with them in every single step of their way of their relationship. I just have never had that. And I feel like if I did have that, would I love them more? Would I love them less? Would I love myself more? Would I love myself less? It's kind of like a hypothetical situation, but I do feel like because I was so afraid to have that conversation that I wasn't authentically myself with them. And I just robbed years of love that I probably could have.
I mean, I think it's like really easy for Desi people, especially like people in the diaspora, to just think of their parents as static individuals and like, okay, they arrived from India or wherever and they're doing their thing and they're trying to survive and that's who they are. And we also impose like a certain identity onto our parents, and we don't realize that our parents are also growing and changing probably just as much as we are, if not more. And I just kind of wonder, like, should we be questioning our parents more regularly, trying to figure out like how they've grown and trying to understand how they've changed, even if we ourselves are kids or young adults?
So I would say that we do have those conversations sooner, but I want to be careful that I think that it is really important to understand your what their expectations are and stuff like that. But more importantly, you can have those conversations, but sometimes those conversations can be negative and they can impact you in such a negative way that you completely lose who you are as a person. You could go into deep depression. Indian parents sometimes are narcissists. I feel like everything is defined by that one sacrifice, what they're doing for you, what they expect from you. And if you want to have this conversation and how you're like, hey, we're all American, right? Mom and dad, like they want to admit they're American, but they are American. Hey, do you want to have these conversations? Like what's happening? And sometimes they'll push you back. But if you do have those conversations, I want to be clear that you should listen to yourself. Deep down in yourself, in your center, you know when something doesn't feel right. There's a fine line between talking to a person, helping them grow so you guys can both grow. But then there's another line where it's just not acceptable. If there are certain things that are being said to you, being told to you, that are just belittling you in every single manner, that I think as a child you need to make the best decision for you, whether that be to continue to have those conversations or to shut it down. Because at the end of the day, you'll hurt yourself more than you can help someone that's not ready to change. But I think it all starts with a conversation. Mm-hmm. I feel like for me, I didn't have that conversation and I robbed so many years of my life. I gave myself such agony. I was going crazy. Okay. But if I had thought about this, that if the reaction of having that conversation earlier, or the reaction of when I had that conversation, if it didn't go the way that I wanted, what would my reality be like? And being brave enough to face that, because as in the Desi community, so much of your identity is shaped by your family, and it just revolves around the family. It really does. And I feel like when you rip that out, it's isolating sometimes, but also more importantly, it's, you have to understand that sometimes your family can hurt you, even if you're trying to do the best thing by having that conversation earlier to see, like, are we both growing at the same time? Or are we both have the belief systems? Is it changing? If it's not changing, if you're more progressive in your thinking than your parents and they're more conservative, knowing when to cross those lines and stopping that conversation, because it can only hurt both of you. So
mm-hmm. It's interesting how you talk about this, like, feeling of loss and never having had an identity and also never having had love, but you relate it to them showing you love in whatever your love language might be. It kind of makes me wonder, like, I don't know, how much are we giving them too much responsibility in that way? Maybe not. I mean, they did choose to be our parents, right? Like, that does come with its own set of responsibilities. But I guess, like, I wonder, like, how much more can they take it? I think, I don't know, that maybe that's a bad question to ask, because it's like you said, Indian parents are sometimes like narcissists because of all these sacrifices that they're making for us that they can't seem to stop reminding us of.
But I think what you're trying to say, if I can help you, I think what you're trying to say is that my love, the concept of love, was defined by my parents' sacrifice. Mm-hmm. That was the first love that I received. That I am
but
seeing.
That sounds like love crazy. From guilt.
From guilt, and yeah. It's the crazy. So it's like, as a woman, mm-hmm. love never came from me. It never comes from me. It never is given to me. It is something that I achieve. Something that I
yes, have that's to fight a very after. Important distinction.
And I feel like that was defined by my gender. And that was defined by my reality. And love for me has always been associated with guilt. And that guilt is the sacrifice that they've given to me, working tirelessly, working these jobs that don't pay enough, you know, not having a life, providing everything for me. That was the purest form of love that I saw growing up, but also at a disadvantage because I was reminded that women can't love. And I feel like it's so interesting because it's like so much of like how I've initially learned what love is was defined by them. And they don't really know how to love. Like they're like kind of like narcissism. Like they don't really know how to love. And more importantly, a lot of Indian people have been arranged marriages and they're told that you will love someone at this age. And now that you're going to get married, I'm not saying that love can't happen after you get married, but it's very different, right? Mm-hmm. You care for that person. It's different. So I was looking for love from my parents, but I don't even think they understood what love was, like what love is. And their understanding of love actually changed as they were in America. And I just never thought that maybe I can have that conversation with them because they don't know what it is to like call a boy or like someone. They associate liking things with like, oh, I like this like paneer sandwich. Yeah. Like, you know, like they don't even know what like means. They don't really know what love means. And they just think about love as a sacrifice. But I think my love language was defined by guilt, which is why I loved my, like why I fell so in love with my husband, because he's like, you need to stop all of that. What do you love? Who are you? What is love to you? What do you need? What can I help you with love? If I love you, how can you accept that I love you? Why do you not love yourself? He made me see what my love language really is, which is very different than, you know, my parents.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right that women do have a very different experience with love. They see women have a very different experience with love because it's something that we kind of have to like fight for. I remember like one time my mom told me that her grandfather's sister died the day that his daughter was born. So he blamed his daughter, and she was born like right after his sister died, like hours later. And so he blamed his daughter for his sister's death. And so he never looked her in the face. Like her whole life, he never looked her in the face, and which is easy to do over there. In those times, there's like 1,000 maids and stuff. And so he could just easily avoid her around the house. The houses are like housing like generations of people. So there's like 1,000 rooms. So, and I'm talking about like, you know, my great-grandfather. So, you know, those times. I think about that story a lot because it seems like almost like the most extreme version of like this woman trying to find love. I don't know too much about her life story, but it's like I just find it so fascinating too that she never ended up having a family. And it feels like it was a consequence of her being less cared for and less loved.
And that makes me so sad, but it's hearing that story isn't the first time I've heard a story like that.
Right. Yeah. They're so ubiquitous.
And it's the reality of brown women. It's the reality of Indian women that I don't know what it is about our history or the way that we have culturally defined what our values are, that we believe that women should not be inherently loved the minute that they're born, that they have to show their worth every single time, whether it be an uneducated mother trying to throw her whole life at her family, raising her children, working tirelessly, always being on her feet, cooking all the meals. Your love should not be defined by what you're doing for someone. Your love should be defined of who you are. And that is something that our community does not understand, that love is not something that should be achieved, something that you should show. It should just be given to a person. Like, we're having this conversation. I love you. Thank you for listening to me. You know, love is so easily given, but why is it so hard to receive for a lot of people? And I think that has a lot to do with just how we define love in our community. And we don't know what love is at all. And especially like men define what love is 24/7, right? There's songs about how beautiful a woman is and that's what love is. No, it's not. So it's their narrative of love never started by a female. It started by a male. And because of that, the way that we understand love is at a disadvantage as a woman.
That's a very interesting point. The most prominent writers, artists, poets, whoever, traditionally were men, especially like before like the 20th century. It was all men. You can barely name any females in the arts. So everything we know about who we are, about identity and love and care, is like, is defined by the lens of a man. And that this is why women are at a disadvantage, not just with love, but like, this is why the feminist movement was born, right? Because like, we don't even, it's like, we don't even recognize women, period.
Correct. And it's just like, if you think about, like, now we're getting into the deep, you know, psychology, yeah. sociology yeah. of love, but it's like so interesting because it's like, love can only come through me if you let it. So if you think about a woman's body, I am able to give the best love that I can by having a child if that's what I choose to have, right? Mm-hmm. So like that, I just think about that. Like our bodies are built to further love in a different way that mm-hmm. other bodies are not allowed to do. So it's just like, I think about love in such a way, but even like when I describe that, I think about it as a different person, right? Like I have been trying to grapple with this idea of love and how, where it starts and what it actually means. And I just can't even begin to take that narrative back because I don't know what it would mean. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's one of those situations where for me, love has always been associated with guilt, what I'm expected to do. It has nothing to do with being me. And I feel like, wait, how can we stop this? Because love yeah. is just so beautiful the way that it is, you know? It doesn't take that much to love someone. I can love a random stranger in the corner of the street because I see them suffering. I can give them a hug and I can give them all the love that I have. Love is simple if you let it. Why do we overcomplicate it?
Did you feel like you had trouble with love in other facets of life other than familial or even other than romantic?
Oh, I mean, I definitely think so with like my friends. And so mm-hmm. sometimes like I feel like the way that I define love is like loyalty. And it's like mm-hmm. what I expect from
that's them. So interesting because that's exactly what's expected of brown girls. Being right? super loyal to the family, following all the rules, doing all the right things.
It's bizarre. So now here I am like looking for loyalty in my friends. And if they're like not trying to hang out with me and I'm like, they don't love me. They're probably busy. Like,
right. Yeah.
I'm literally like displaying all the things that I wish I had within me, like in all of the relationships that I have with everyone. And I realized that later on in my life that there's certain things that I need to heal inside. But I feel like when I was looking for a relationship, whether it's a friend, a romantic one, family, or a stranger, I was looking for something that I never had within me. And that has shaped my reality of every single relationship that I've had outside of my family. I have like two best friends my whole life. I remember, you know, as a brown woman, holding relationship with other brown women. First of all, let's just make that important distinction. I was only allowed to have friends that were girls.
You only had relationships with females. Yes, absolutely. I feel like it's still like that for me.
Yeah. So it's like, I literally don't, I wish I could have friendship with men. I just honestly don't know. I'm such a victim of my own conditioning at that because I just don't even know what that would be like. So mm-hmm. it's like when I will go and have these relationships with females, I was expecting loyalty. I was expecting the perfect brown girl. Like mm-hmm. here are my traits. It's like, you're like literally putting your bio data to them. Like, I believe that I love my family. I believe like all these other things. And if I don't think they love their family in a way, like, then I wouldn't be the friend. Like, that it makes no sense. Like, I never really gave my friendship the best chance that I had because I was defining what that friendship was supposed to mean to me.
Yeah. Yeah, you look for things that your inner child is seeking.
Yep.
I feel like I had a very similar experience as you, like, not as much with the whole, like, sex is part of it only because I don't have any brothers. So like, I just have one sister. So I didn't get to see what it would be like if I were a male, but I was missing like a male presence in my life. And so I seek like, okay, what do I think males should be? Well, here's my dad as an example. And that's pretty much my only example, actually. And so like, I impose these personalities onto men, and I stopped doing this like years ago, but I did notice this as a pattern in like the male friendships that I had growing up, that They were just kind of a reflection of like either what I was looking for or what I believed men are supposed to be.
And it's not new, you know what I mean? It's just something that we all experience. And I feel like what a great disservice are we doing to these friendships that could probably be life-altering, mm-hmm. that we define what we expect from them?
Like, yeah.
Flat out, I've always expected loyalty. How can you be loyal to a person you've known for 1 minute?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost like sabotaging that relationship. But I mean,
yeah.
by some grace of God, I have some really close friends that those were also the values that they wanted to see. And we have developed really close bonds. But I think it's one of those scenarios where it's our relationships with our family, our significant other are defined by somebody else.
Yeah.
And for me, I talk about this quite so much. I talk about this so much in my book, but the relationship that I have with my husband and like even getting to that level, like I already in my head created a marriage checklist. I literally have one in my book and it talks about, are you the same caste? Are you the same religion? Are you the same race? Do you come from all these other things? And like, if you don't check that box, then I'm not going to even talk to you. What the F? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like,
yeah.
Here I am prescribing this relationship that I'm expecting, and the end result is going to be not really fulfill what my soul is looking for. So
I feel like the biggest takeaway that I've had from this conversation is that the problem with finding love, or the barrier to finding love, like true love, whether it's familial, platonic, romantic, whatever, is imposing your own background onto other people. And I think like I'm really glad you reached out to me for this, with this episode idea, because I feel like it's through having conversations like this that we become better people, and we also become like better friends and daughters and wives and husbands and stuff.
I 100% agree. I feel like it's so much right now in life, in the time that we're in, we should never feel alone. There's mm-hmm. so many other people like me, you out there. And I feel like sometimes we get into that reality and convince ourselves that we're alone. I believed I was alone 95% of my life. Holy crap, that's like a lot of my life.
Yeah.
No one understands me. No one understands my experiences of being a girl. No one, all these things of what people don't understand. But I never once had that conversation that really hurt me with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Openly talking about being hurt that my dad didn't like my gender involved so much healing in my heart. Okay. Yeah. I never want to tell someone my deepest, darkest secret, but I realized when I put that filter down, I can actually have a conversation with you that's uncensored, and we're about to be besties. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about whatever now. Like, if there's something that's hurting you, something that you love, let's just have a conversation. I would love to talk to you. But I think once you break down those filters, that you're able to have a conversation that's truly you. And then you can really smile from your soul about, I'm Sabrit and I'm this weirdo.
So maybe that's what life is about, is learning to live this unfiltered version of yourself.
I would love to see those unfiltered versions of everyone. Like, I don't want to see those Snapchat filters. I don't want to see those positive like highlight reels on Instagram. I want to see when you're down in the dumps, and then your ability to post something where it's, you're so authentically hurt makes me love you more, because you need all the love I can give you, because you're not alone.
So tell us, I do want to start wrapping this up, but tell us how to find, I'm so excited for your book. Tell us how to find it. When is it coming out, et cetera?
So my book is coming out fall 2020. It's going to be out for a public release in September. You can purchase it on Amazon. You can also purchase it on a lot of different platforms. I'm not quite sure yet, because we're talking through that.
Right, okay.
But if you want to know when the book is going to be released, I do have a website. My website is sabritkangrajeev.com. That's sabritkangrajeev.com. And you can find me on Instagram. It's just my first and last name, Sabrit Kangrajeev. And I'm pretty excited to have this truth out there. I feel like we need more books like this that are just being unfiltered, and they're just having these uncomfortable conversations. And who wants to, first of all, write a memoir about their own experiences, about being an immigrant, about being a girl? No one. But I would love to be that voice for anyone that wants to be seen. So that's where you can find my book. It's on my website. I'm Sabrit. I loved having this conversation. And if anyone ever wants to talk to me, just shoot me a line. I would love to talk to people.
Yeah, I'm going to put your handle and your website in the episode description so everybody can access it easily. I'll also tag you on my Instagram post when I put this episode up. Before I let you go, do you have any book recommendations?
I have so many book recommendations. What kind of book do you want to like read?
Maybe something related to what we've been talking about today.
Oh, so my favorite book ever, two of them. They're Buddhist books. I apologize in advance. But the book that literally changed my life is called The Power of Now. Oprah recommended it. I can't remember the author, but just look up The Power of Now. It literally talks about how you can be more present and more mindful about learning your own soul. And that book actually changed my life. The second book that I think is instrumental in my development and my growth as a human being has been this book called The Art of Communication.
And I've heard of that book. That's been on my list.
Oh, you need to read that book. That book, literally, my family and my friends are sick of me because I buy that book and give it out for presents. They're like, we don't want to read this book. I'm like, read this book. But that book is so great because it tells you how to have those conversations with yourself, with your peers, with your family. And I think that book has literally just changed my life in the way that I understand everything. But I'll have a fiction book if anyone wants to read it.
Yes, but please. I love fiction.
I am currently vibing so hard on this book. It's called A Woman Is No Man. And
like your type of book.
It's, you know, my type of book. It talks about, it's like this woman and everything was defined for her. It's a really great book. But I think the two books I would totally recommend are just those two Buddhist books, but I can like look up a few more because I read so many books I don't even know. But the Power of Now and The Art of Communication is the books that will change your life.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that episode, and I hope you learned something. As Sabreeth mentioned, you can find more information about her and her book at sabreethkangrajiv.com, as well as on Instagram at sabreethkangrajiv. You can also reach out to me at The Desi Condition on Instagram, Facebook, and on Twitter at @TDCpodcast_. For more information about this episode and other episodes, you can visit my website at tdcpodcast.com. And one more thing, if you're listening on a platform in which you can leave ratings and reviews, please consider doing so. I would super appreciate it, and I appreciate you. Once again, thank you for listening, and I will talk to you next time.